wars we fight, grinding by the way things ought to be. Tonight I don't mind them switching sides and standing up for things they believe in. When they're running down my countrymen, they're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down the way of life, I'm fighting and falling down to me. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. You're running down my countrymen, you're walking on the fighting side of me. And I wonder just how long the rest of us can count on being free. They love our milk and honey, but they preach about some other way of living. When they're running down my country horse, they're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down the way of life, I'm fighting in a far-dark field. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. You're running down my country, man. You're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down the way of life. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. And you run down my country, man. You walking on the fighting side of me.
Yes, when you're running down my country, you're walking down the fighting side of me. And that's that's the name of this program here on White Resistance Radio. .com. Well, lots more news and views for our people. And of course, those are the European founding settler people of the Dominion of Canada, United States of America, the Dominions of Australia and New Zealand, the Republic of South Africa, Rhodesia, and all of you who may be listening this morning in the European heartland. Now, there's so much news. Let's take something from an issue from the recent story from the Huffington Post. Huffington Post writer faces $1 million libel suit. Plaintiff alleges he was falsely labeled a white supremacist. The Huffington Post and one of its writers is facing a $1 million libel suit filed by Charles Johnson, who alleges he was falsely labeled a white supremacist. Charles Johnson filed a complaint January 16th in the Houston Division of the Southern District of Texas against Verizon CMP Holdings LLC, or HuffingtonPost.com Inc., and Andy Campbell, alleging libel. According to the complaint, Johnson is involved with conservative political causes. He alleges that a February 17, 2019 Huffington Post article authored by Campbell, titled "Two GOP Lawmakers Host Chuck Johnson, Holocaust-Denying White Nationalist," was a hit job, suggesting he was a white supremacist, white nationalist, and anti-Semitic. Johnson seeks monetary relief in excess of $1 million, trial by jury, and other relief. Now, I must say, I don't know anything about Charles Johnson. Libel is a difficult case to prove in the United States. Libel laws are very strict in England. Anything that would damage a person's reputation is potentially libelous. Now, truth is a defense, but in the United States, a libel must not only be false, but it must be shown to be malicious if a person is a public figure. And this, Mr. Johnson, of course, is a radio host, would be a public figure. it doesn't mean that absolutely anything can be said against you, but it's hard to prove. First of all, you have to prove it's false, and then secondly, that the writer knew it was false, or at least egregiously didn't care, and then that this was done for malice. Now, there's a famous case with Carol Burnett. This would be about 40 years ago. Carol Burnett, of course, was a comedian and a very popular entertainer, and she always had a good image. She did, she's not sleazy, she was not foul-mouthed, she was a family woman, and so on. And it alleged, the article one of those really hit pieces, I think it was the National Enquirer, or one of these really kind of trashy journals, or trashy papers, said that Carol Burnett had been at a dinner, I believe, with Henry Kissinger in New York. And she'd gotten blind drunk and vomited and so on. Well, you know, this certainly was not the image most people had of Carol Burnett. And, of course, that would be part of the reason to run the article. It said, you know, Carol Burnett's a phony. Well, the only problem was it was absolutely not true. Carol Burnett denied it. Henry Kissinger denied it. There were no credible other witnesses. In fact, the man who compiled the story went to his editor and said, you know, I think we're wrong on this one. I don't think Carol Burnett, I think our source was wrong, that she didn't do this. Nevertheless, they ran the piece, and she took them to court, and she won in the end. She won a pretty sizable judgment for libel, but all those things had to be proven. First of all, that was not true. Secondly, that was damaging. Well, that's fairly clear. That would be damaging. But then it being published with for malice, that they'd known better, they'd been told better, that they knew they didn't have any evidence, and it was done anyway. Well, you know, and that, needless to say, hurts people. So how does it stand for this fellow in Texas? I don't know. Like, for one thing, I don't know. In American law, and a lot of us in the nationalist movement have discussed this, you've got to be careful about frivolous lawsuits because, I mean, they cost you a lot of money. White nationalists and white supremacists, well, there's a difference. Is there anything to back up the fact he might be a white nationalist? Then that's not libel. Holocaust denier. Well, as I say, I don't know what he said, and my feeling is that the courts will not be kind, will not bend over backwards for us. So if you have questioned this new religion of Holocaust in any way, you probably better not sue. I wish the guy luck. Hope he collects a big bunch of money, but I don't know. Well, here's a story. It's been making the rounds. It's some video taken just a couple of days ago, January 23rd. It's at a Holocaust memorial in Jerusalem. And the story goes that going down a reception line, Prince Charles, he's the heir to the British throne, he's number two, right after the Queen, goes down this reception line, walks right by U.S. President Mike Pence, shakes Netanyahu's hands, he's the Prime Minister of Israel, and various other important people, and just walks right past him. Now, that's the story. So, was this a snub? Is the prince such a dork he didn't even realize the Vice President Pence was next? I don't know. But I'll tell you what really bothers me about the story. It's not whether or not Chucky Wucky shook Vice President Pence's hand or snubbed him. What was he doing there in the first place? Vice President Pence, I mean. Oh, yes, and Chucky Wucky, too. Now, this is, I believe they're over there commemorating the 75th anniversary of the liberation of Auschwitz. Well, although actually Auschwitz wasn't liberated as such. The Germans abandoned it, and they told the inmates detention camp, you can do one of two things. You can come west with us to Germany, or you can wait for the Soviet armies that were then about 50 miles away. Well, some waited and some went west. You know who went west? A guy by the name of Elie Wiesel. Now, for years, Elie Wiesel was a pounded the drums of blasting the Germans and boo-hoo-hooing about his experience during the Holocaust, etc., etc., etc. But one of the things, you've got to read these stories with your eyes wide open and your brain in gear. You see, I think we're so used to propaganda that we tend to just accept it. But think about it. He would at one point write that every person should keep in a corner of their heart a hatred for that which is the German. So everybody should hate Germans, to make it crude, not quite crude. So, question, why did he go west with the Germans? Why not wait for the communists? Don't know. Anyway, you've got to watch these things carefully, because frankly, I think we are sold a bill of goods. I'm going to take off a couple of other examples. Now, the British royal family is beyond disgusting. You've got Meghan, Prince Harry marrying this mulatto. Okay, I know, true love must run its course and so on, but come on, honest to goodness. Is this what you want for the royal family? Well, he made his choice, and granted, he's not very close to the throne. I think he's sixth back. So it would take quite a number of bad things to happen. I mean, the number of other people would have to die before, but I mean, it's theoretically possible. Like, Prince Harry is a flake of the first order. He's a big environmentalist. Okay, fine, I respect anybody's desire to save the environment. You know what he did a few months ago? He went off to a conference by other Euro trash or similarly rich people in an exclusive resort near Palermo in Sicily. And he flew in a private jet. So did 103 other participants. Now, they're all concerned about the carbon footprint, burning fossil fuels, etc. In their private jets, they said there was hardly any room for anything in the Palermo airport. And some of the other heavy hitters came in with their yachts, some of them which were allegedly pretty close to the size of aircraft carriers. Those must have burned up a pile of fuel. Prince Harry's looking for a home in Vancouver, and apparently they will be wanting to paint their little baby Archie's walls a gender neutral color. I'm not quite sure what that would be. I guess pink would be for girls, blue would be for boys. What would be gender neutral? Black. I don't know. I mean, this guy's a flake. Okay. Well, his brother isn't a whole lot better. He's married to the Duchess of Cambridge, and she's Jewish. The Duchess of Cambridge has taken photographs of Holocaust survivors in a contribution to an exhibit marking 75 years since the end of, they say genocide, let's just say people who died. Two survivors are pictured alongside grandchildren in images taken by Catherine, released on Holocaust Memorial Day. That will be last Monday. One of the, go on as to who some of these people are. The Duchess, who is patron of the Royal Photographic Society, said the harrowing atrocities of the Holocaust, which were caused by the most unthinkable evil, will lay forever in our hearts. Despite unbelievable trauma at the start of their lives, Yvonne Bernstein, that's one of the women she photographed, and Stephen Frank are two of the most life-affirming people that we've ever met. The Duchess said her aim was to make the portraits deeply personal, a celebration of family and life. And anyway, you wonder why this fixation on the British royal family, even involving themselves in this so-called Holocaust. That there are all sorts of things that have happened in Britain that are to the British people that are well worth commemorating. You just wonder the obsession. Why would the Prince Charles even go over to this Holocaust remembrance thingy in Jerusalem? I mean, what's it to Britain? Why would the world leaders go and pay homage to their shrine? You say when people like me call this the new religion of Holocaust, we're saying that very deliberately. That this is that it takes on the aspects of a religion, and like a religion, it has its shrines, it has its feast days. Like there's the Holocaust Remembrance Day, there's the anniversary of the Soviet arrival in Auschwitz, and so on and so on. I'm going to pick up two more interesting items. Well, one of these stories I dealt with yesterday involved the fretting and moaning and groaning by Jewish groups about the renewed nationalism in many countries in Eastern Europe, particularly in the Ukraine, in Latvia, and Lithuania. And the honoring of people, of men, who fought the communists in the Second World War, and who are nationalists, who in many cases died, who fought the communists with great bravery, and are now being recognized again for who they are, who they were, and how they helped build their country. Well, what has Jewish groups so upset is that some of these people were supposedly, well, first of all, they collaborated with the Germans, and that they in some cases were involved in the killing of Jews. Now, the allegations are sometimes a little hazy involved. You mean they personally shot some Jews, or they ordered the shooting of Jews? Well, that's not always clear. But a couple of things that have to be remembered about this is, first of all, it was war. These people didn't necessarily have a wide variety of choices. Their lands had been occupied by the communists, in some cases, since 1918. What were their options? They had thrown the communists out. Now the communists in 44 and then in 45, were surging back again. What do they do? Well, the only people fighting the communists were the German army. You make an alliance with them. And it isn't all about Jews. See, the Jews are, the Jewish lobby is basically trying to hijack history. Everything is seen through the lens of their interests. Well, that's not the way the rest of the world necessarily sees things. So these guys were nationalists. Well, I mentioned that most of that yesterday. But one of the ones making the biggest noise in Canada is a fellow named Bernie Farber. Bernie Farber, for a long time, was the CEO of the Canadian Jewish Congress. The Jewish Congress went out of existence and morphed into something else. And Bernie Farber was not part of the new order. He has had a number of jobs. Most recently, He's the biggest noise at the Canadian anti-hate network. Well, they're not actually against hate. They're against white people and against they're against nationalists. Anyway, but Bernie Farber likes to tell the story. In fact, endless bends your ear story that his father was the only person in his family who escaped a village in Poland where most of the Jews were killed. So he said, came to Canada and formed a new family, etc., etc. Well, the key element in that story is everybody in the family died except Bernie Farber's father. Okay, now we switch to another person. I'm going to tell you a little bit about him, but his name is Harry Capito. Now, he's a Jew. He's a lifelong Trotskyist, so that means hardcore communist. I'll get back to some of the other stuff about him, but here's a little bit about his biography. Capito was born after the war to a Polish Jewish family in a displaced person camp in Ulm in West Germany. He had lost almost his entire family in the Holocaust. The family moved to Israel in 1948, then came to Canada in 1952, and he grew up in Toronto. Okay, I'll get back to him in a moment. But do you see the similarity in detail? Capito lost, all the family. He had lost almost his entire family. And go through the stories of any number of other so-called survivors, and five will get you 10. They lost their whole family. In fact, there was a woman doing the rounds of secondary school in southern Ontario a little over 10 years ago, and she would go into and tell, regale the students with stories of how she'd been in Auschwitz, her whole family gone to Auschwitz, and they had as they came in, it was men and boys to one side, they would be worked to death, and women and women on the other side, and they'd be gassed. Okay. And she and her teenage sister were with the women. Well, one of the students asked another student, "Well, wait a sec, shouldn't she have been gassed?" I mean, like, you know, they divide the story was the men were sent over to work, the women to be executed. Well. You know, right off the bat, you know, you've got to have your brain in gear. And anyway, she then asserted that her whole family perished in Auschwitz, except for her. Well, except for her sister, too. And then apparently they met up with some other relative sometime after the war. Well, wait a second, it wasn't your entire family. I mean, I don't mean to be hung up on numbers, but, you know, you're telling me a story, and it matters. You see, many of these stories fall into a pattern. And I've got to say, the pattern really tends to be bullshit. And we shouldn't have to put up with it. Anyway, the lawyer here, Harry Capito, well, actually, he's no longer a lawyer. He was disbarred over 20 years ago. Harry Capito broke all sorts of rules. He always has styled himself as fighting for the underdog and those who don't have... can't afford a lawyer, and so on. It wasn't quite as idealistic as it sounds. Harry Capito was initially convicted and was disbarred. I'll tell you what for. He was billing legal aid. Overbilling. In fact, at one point he billed for over 24 hours in a single day. He claimed, well, he wasn't very good on the paperwork and so on. Well, okay, not all of us are, and that's why you hire help to do that. Anyway, he's made himself a Class A nuisance. Now he's going to go back to politics, supposedly. Well, he was a Trotskyist, radical Trotskyist when I knew him at the University of Toronto, and he has been active in the Socialist New Democratic Party, or NDP, and apparently he's going to go back to that. The rest of the particulars of his case are, I don't think, particularly of interest to us tonight. But I'm always fascinated by these people who are doers of good to mankind, but certainly do very, very well for themselves along the way. Now, the Conservative Party of Canada is having a leadership contest that's going to culminate in June with the election of by the party members of a new person to lead the party. And a couple of prominent names have sort of teased a bit, but decided not to run. People like this leftist, sometime liberal Jean Charest from Quebec. He in the end decided not to run, partly because I think he's got so much baggage from his time when he was Premier of Quebec, including the allegations of corruption and so on, that he decided he wasn't going to stick his neck out there. A man by the name of Pierre Poilievre, who's had a reputation of a bit of an attack dog, but he's young and quite presentable. He decided at the last minute not to run. But there is a very conservative, social conservative, named Richard Descarrie, from Quebec, who is going to run as a social conservative. And I think this could be very good. Well, already there are actually voices in the party saying he should not be allowed to run. That's right, not be allowed to run. On what basis? Well, he's a social conservative. He has strong views on same-sex marriage and LGBTQ. Now, I would think that's perfectly all right. Other people in the party have different views. Isn't that what you want to do in a leadership contest? You want to hash things out and so on, but not with the modern left wing, which unfortunately includes many so-called conservatives. you are allowed to dissent on only a very narrow range of issues, and questioning the unrestricted right to murder your unborn child right up until the child pops its head out of the womb. Many Canadians don't agree with that. That is the law of the land, or I should say the lack of law of the land. many people, even people who might justify abortion at a certain point, have a problem with abortions in the third trimester. But supposedly, you're not supposed to have allowed to express those views, even in the Conservative Party. You're certainly not in the Liberal Party. You must be an abortionist to run for the Liberal Party. Similarly with same-sex marriage, which our rascally Supreme Court brought in about 15 years ago, when they ruled that the traditional definition of marriage, that is, you know, a man and a woman, was discriminatory. You see, if a man could marry a woman, a woman could marry a man, why couldn't a woman marry a woman? Well, that's discriminatory. And why couldn't a man marry a man? Now, of course, they didn't say this, but why couldn't you marry a dog if you wanted? At that point, you know, our legal system proved itself to be totally in the thrall of the cultural Marxists. Oh, it's lost. There's no nice way around it. They're lost. The problem is when you're lost on such simple matters, when you can't get marriage right, you're going to get other stuff wrong. Prior to that, there had been a vote in the House of Commons, and a majority of members of Parliament, in fact, I believe a majority of all parties, liberals, socialists, separatists, conservatives, all agree that marriage was a man and a woman. And this isn't hard. This is not a trick question. This isn't a deep philosophical challenge. Well, the Supremo said, well, they didn't think that was right. Now, you could say, well, okay, the Supremo's ruled. No, not necessarily. Parliament could have invoked the notwithstanding clause, which is very simple. It says, notwithstanding this nonsensical ruling by the Supremos, the following will be the law of the land. In other words, from now on, there will be the marriage will be the traditional definition of marriage. It seemed pretty straightforward, but Parliament didn't, and so we have same-sex marriage. This is all by way of giving you a bit of a background to this conservative gentleman. He was a former close advisor to former conservative Prime Minister Stephen Harper. So he's well experienced in Ottawa. Here's an article about him by Justin Ling in the National Post. Richard Dechary, a long-shot candidate for the Conservative Party leadership, has made a name for himself this week by writing off the LGBTQ acronym as a liberal term and concluding that being gay is a choice. Unfortunately, that's just the tip of the iceberg in terms of Dechary's wild views. Well, okay, maybe you don't agree with his views, but shouldn't he have a right to express them and run up the flag and see how many people salute? Well, see, that's what they worry about. Most of these views are fairly commonsensical. LGBTQ and the string of letters gets ever bigger. It used to be LGBT. Well, now it's LGBTQ, but there's actually more. There's a couple of I's and a plus and two S, which means two-spirited, which is allegedly what the Native Indians call somebody who's sexually mixed up. This is a modern, this is, I would say, a leftist invention. So I don't think he's wrong on that. As to you choose to be homosexual, that I think is difficult. I mean, more difficult. I think it's complex. I think some people are born badly wired. Others, I think, are confused. And we live in a world that just pounds the confusion at people. So if you're already just a little bit mixed up, you're going to have all sorts of voices whispering in your ear that, well, really, maybe you're non-binary. What does that mean? Well, it means, well, binary is, you know, one or two. It's computer talk. Or in terms of sex, it being male or female. Well, I don't know. It kind of looked like a male, but I feel like a woman today. I mean, I don't know. You're mixed up. Anyway, let's get back to Mr. Dechary. The one-time deputy chief of staff to Stephen Harper from his days in opposition has spent the past few years sharing his political views on Quebec City radio station Radio X. It's on there that he expresses all measure of views that might rub against his self-billing as a full-spectrum conservative. This is the opinion of this Justin Ling. As a guest on Radio X in 2015, Dechary said that feminism had led to a state of permanent war and went on to say the complaints from Julie Snyder, she's the ex-wife of Parti Québécois politician and big media owner, Pierre Carpelado, over the amount of derision she'd received for her feminist views was pathetic. Yeah, I don't see anything wrong with that. The radical feminism has created a permanent state of war between the sexes. And believe me, this serves nobody's interest. Well, it doesn't serve the interests of women. Many self-styled feminists hit their 40s and 50s. They don't have a man in their life. Who'd want them with their prickly natures? They may have had some success in the business world. They now realize they won't be able to have a child, and they're too old, and they're lonely, and they wonder why. They have bought, unfortunately, into a bill of cultural Marxist nonsense, pumped out by people like Betty Friedan and many other ones since. It's created a war between the sexes, a situation where you practically have to have your lawyer present before you engage in sex with your wife, or some people do with their girlfriend or others, knowing that to determine that there's consent all the way along the way. Well, that may appeal to a lawyer, but that's just not the way the real world works. I kiss you, darling, and you kiss me back. Better stop. You do consent to this. Yes. Kiss again. Okay. Well, anyway, I don't have to spell out the scenario too much further. I think you get the message. This isn't the way the real world works. And yet, there are places where people have gotten into trouble, even with their own spouse, for non-consensual sex. It's always been a difficult call. The dance between the sexes is not something simple. Anyway, I'll leave that because I think his views are correct. The same month, Descari was asked about the Mohawk territories in Quebec, these are the Indians, and proceeded to denigrate indigenous culture and land claims before concluding that there's a mafia-like clique that governs it in places like that. He reiterated that he missed the days of the Reform Party when there was support for eliminating First Nation reserves outright. And there are Indians who agree with that, too. Leave the reserve system is an unusual. It's partly self-government, although the Canadian taxpayers pay for the absolute bulk of it. Indians on reserves don't pay taxes. So so there's no taxation, but they have representation, but no taxation. We the taxpayers have taxation, but no representation on what goes on there. The reserves, in many cases, restrict Indians that are on the reserve. They can't individually own land, and that might be a bad thing. It might be actually a good thing if they were to be able to individually own land. And when he talks about the mafia, many of the reserves are run by as petty tyrants by a chief and his extended family, who scarf up, in many cases, all the goodies, while other Indians on the reserve get nothing or very little. And that's one of the reasons on many reserves there's a problem with fresh drinking water, sanitation, and so on. Not that there isn't any money that goes into these reserves, but because often the money is misused by the chiefs. So what Descari says is certainly debatable, discussable. It doesn't sound like, it's not as Justin Ling is suggesting, it's just views that are beyond the pale. A few months earlier, there had been a discussion on feminism. Quote, this has been drilled into our heads for 40 years. You take one or two cases of conjugal violence, and effectively, if the man is stronger than the woman, you'll have more dramatic consequences. But psychological violence, when couples bicker, it's women who go there. What have the police been doing for 20 or 30 years? It's always been the man who pays. What have the courts been doing? It's the man who pays, because that's what the feminist lobby has put in the heads of people. In the same interview, he said feminism had left us with transgenders and all that crap. Well, those are strong views, but I don't think he's wrong. The courts are very, very, and police are very, very biased against men. There's a domestic dispute in Ontario. If there's a call, the man is told to leave the house or the apartment. Doesn't matter, he may not have 10 cents in his pocket, he's got to get out. And it will be negotiated when he gets back. He's paying the bills, I'd say, but he's got to get out. Now, I'm not saying in no case might that be necessary. But it's just automatic. The whole system has been moved by feminism completely against men. And this is not good. In 2014, after the attack on the Charlie Hebdo magazine in France, Descarrie went on Radio X to lament that he didn't identify with the leftist magazine. It's not a magazine who has to clean up this fundamental problem in France, which is the presence of Muslims on French soil, which is a time bomb. To be clear, it's that not all Muslims are Islamists, but all Islamists are Muslims. Well, that's an interesting point of view. That there really is a problem with Muslim immigration. First of all, in France, there are far too many of them. But there is a problem with who Muslims are. Who are they? What is their loyalty to the larger society? That's a valid question. Because some definitely do not have loyalty to France. Well, this is Paul Fromm. You're on the fighting side. I mean, can I take a bit of a musical break right now to change your pace? Let's have some good old German drinking music. This is Paul Fromm. You're on the fighting side of me here on WhiteResistanceRadio.com. Thank you. Paul Fromm, back with you again tomorrow, same time, midnight Eastern time. The show is repeated at 8 in the morning and 4 in the afternoon. All of those are Eastern Standard Time. And I sign up tonight, as I always do, with the anthem of the real Canada, the Maple Leaf Forever. This is Paul Fromm, and you're on the fighting side of me.
In days of yore, from Britain's shore, Wolfe the dauntless hero came and planted firm Britannia's flag on Canada's fair domain. Here may it wave, our host our pride, and joined in love together. The thistle, shamrock, rose, and twine, the maple leaf forever. The maple leaf, our emblem dear, the maple leaf forever. God save our queen, and heaven bless the maple leaf forever. Heights and Lundy's Lane, our brave fathers side by side for freedom, homes and loved ones dear, firmly stood and nobly died. And those dear rights which they maintained, we swear to yield them never. Our watchword evermore shall be the maple leaf forever. The maple leaf, our emblem dear, the maple leaf forever. God save our queen, and heaven bless the maple leaf forever. Our fair dominion now extends from Cape Race to Nootka Sound. May peace forever be our lot, and plenteous store abound. And may those ties of love be ours, which discord cannot sever, and flourish green o'er freedom's home, the maple leaf forever. The maple leaf forever. God save our queen, and heaven bless the maple leaf forever.